WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. On the seventh day of the ceasefire truce between Israel and Hamas, eight Israeli hostages are released and Israel frees 30 Palestinian prisoners. CBS's Chris Livesay in Jerusalem on the chances of a truce being continued.
Qatari sources, and I should emphasize, Qatar has been pivotal in setting up this truce agreement between Hamas and Israel. They tell CBS News that the negotiations, which are ongoing on a daily basis, specifically for tomorrow, remain hopeful that this ceasefire will be extended once again.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says with winter weather moving in, Russia seems intent on taking out Ukraine's energy infrastructure, depriving the Ukrainian people of heat and electricity.
We have more work to do in support of Ukraine, and we need Congress to take action to pass additional supplemental funding so that we can keep providing Ukraine with the air defense assets, the protection equipment, and the backup supplies that they need.
There appears to be growing interest among Congressman George Santos detractors to turn the page. More from CBS's Scott McFarlane on Capitol Hill.
On the eve of a vote to expel embattled New York Republican George Santos, his colleagues blistered him.
I'm curious to know.
George Santos has built his persona, his personal and political life, on a foundation of lies.
But Santos refuses to go quietly.
Are you reconsidering resigning ahead of this to avoid any spectacle?
Swarmed at a news conference outside the Capitol, Santos argued he's the victim of political bullying.
It's all theater. It's theater for the cameras. It's theater for the microphones.
But it's some of his fellow Republicans leading the charge to boot him.
A federal judge has blocked Montana's first-in-the-nation ban on TikTok, saying it's unconstitutional. CBS's Tom Foti with more.
The opinion by U.S. District Judge Donald Molloy is mostly in agreement with arguments made by attorneys for TikTok, whose Chinese ownership has raised data security concerns. Montana's legislature was the first state to try to ban it. TikTok and some of its content creators contend the Montana ban violates free speech rights.
The ban had been scheduled to take effect January 1st. A new study finds the U.S. is failing to keep pace with the housing and care needs of older Americans, Harvard researcher Jennifer Molinsky.
About a third of older adults who are what we call housing cost burden, they're paying more than 30% of their income for housing, and half of those people are paying more than half of their income.
The study calls for more federal aid for senior housing and help modifying homes for the elderly. Wall Street closes out November with big gains. The Dow closed up 520 points. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A group of seven unions is filing a lawsuit to end the state's near-total ban on collective bargaining for public employees. The lawsuit was filed in a Dane County court on Thursday. The unions argue that Act 10 led to lower pay, staffing shortages, and poor working conditions. They say that because police and firefighters are able to collectively bargain, but teachers are not, Act 10 violates the state's constitution. Meanwhile, Wisconsin teacher pay isn't keeping up with inflation. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum finds that median pay for teachers in the state is 12% less than in 2009, adjusted for inflation. Teachers in Wisconsin's largest school districts got raises this year. It still doesn't appear to be enough to keep up with the cost of living. The median wage for teachers in Wisconsin is $59,000. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Chicago Bulls tonight at the United Center. Pat Connaughton will not play. He's out with a sprained ankle suffered Tuesday night against the Miami Heat. Baseball, the Brewers' Devin Williams named the National League Relief Pitcher of the Year. Williams took over as the Brewers' closer after Josh Hader was traded to the Padres back in 2022. NFL, it's the Packers and the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football from Lambeau Field. Green Bay's young receivers have improved ever since they held weekly meetings on Tuesdays to prepare for the next opponent. How's it helped? Rookie Jaden Reed.
Just seeing everything from the same eye, you know, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all going out there. And just for us to be on the same page and understanding where everyone is coming from, that helps the offense tremendously.
I asked Reed, if the meetings are on Tuesday, does he ever take a day off?
Nah, I'm in here every single day pretty much. I can't think of a day I'm not here.
That's Packers rookie wide receiver number 11, Jaden Reed. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, low in the upper teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, high mid-30s. Mostly cloudy and upper 30s for the weekend with a brief rain or snow shower possible Saturday night into Sunday morning. Current temp is 30.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. Step on up and enjoy what's on tap today. Local talk about the Valley and all of Wisconsin. In fact, it's on tap every day. This is 93.5 The Tap.
We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Sure you've heard. Sure the news covered it extensively. I'm sure the mainstream corporate-controlled right-wing media got all over the fact that our Environmental Protection Agency proposed a new rule. Going to get rid of lead pipes. Evidently, we've got about 9 million lead pipes still floating around. And look, understand. We know lead's not good for us. We know it. But here's the other part of this. We know that the lead pipes are probably in poverty-ridden areas, so most people don't really care, which is why you probably didn't get to see it on the corporate-controlled mainstream right-wing media. Probably didn't get to see that at all. But, you know, I read this report, and I'm like, hey, this is a great idea, because, one, we're going to get rid of lead pipes, and been talking about lead my entire life. So the fact that they're proposing in the next 10 years to replace all of them sounds like a great idea. We might save a generation of kids from lower IQ scores and all of the other things that happen. But yeah, don't get too excited, because our Supreme Court, they're about ready to destroy regulatory oversight. So maybe these kind of proposed rules, that can never come into effect. Because what does the EPA know about water? Of course, you know, we've got six right-wing judges. You know, they know everything. So I had to throw that out there because, look, you know, the sad reality is this administration is doing some really great stuff, and we're not hearing an awful lot about it. Not at all. Now, I wanted to start today with an email that I got from William. And look, I've been getting a lot more email now that we're winding down the live radio program. But William sent me this email. And it's one of these things that, look, I'll tell you, it's right in my wheelhouse. So thank you, William. But he says, quote, "We need a generational understanding that greed is not good." Uh-huh, I think I've said that. He quotes Ben Franklin. The poor, he said, have little, beggars have none, the rich too much, enough not one. And that's one of the, I think, Poor Richard's Almanac, one of the things in there. I don't know if Ben actually believed what he was saying, but it makes sense. You know. And he asked the question, what happened to the wisdom of Ben Franklin and past generations? He says, we were once a nation with one of the most balanced economies in the world, but that was generations ago. He said, we have greedy corporations gouging us blind and political leaders who are corrupt. How did we get here and who is responsible is a question that must be answered. How did we go from a nation with broad shared prosperity to one with haves and have-nots? Republicans have brought us tax reform and Democrats brought us bad trade deals. Who is fighting for the little guy? The working guys and gals like us. He says rampant greed by the wealthy, corporations, and a Republican Party ruled by a tax-cheating grifter. That's a start. How are we to fight back, he asks. The deck is stacked, and we, the little people, are being crushed. And it feels like no one cares. Now, here's the thing. You know, I read through all of that, and the part that you know, grabbed me is the no one cares. The fact that a lot of working people believe that no one cares. That their struggles, that their sacrifices, that their hard times, that nobody cares. And you can blame that on a political class that's, you know, worried about continually funding their next election. You can blame that on a news media that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. If it's divisive and feeds the outrage, then clearly something we have to talk about. We don't talk about policy anymore. We don't talk about the things that maybe, I don't know, might make our lives better. And this, William, is where we founded this show on this idea. The idea that working people would have a voice, a place to share thoughts, ideas, to want to talk about the things that will make lives better. So if you believe no one cares, understand that I care. And that there are millions of people out there who do care. And that we, if we come back somewhere, you know, closer to the same, put aside all the crazy stuff that we're force-fed daily. We have to figure out how to solve real problems. We have to figure out how we make sure that we have an economy that works for all of us. Because, you know, as I've said before, the reality is we're heading towards very significant changes in our economy. And the question that keeps coming back up for me is, you know, what good is an economy if it doesn't support the working people? If it doesn't give you opportunities to move ahead? If it doesn't reward hard work? If it doesn't, you know, I hate using the adage, but it's what I grew up believing in. If you worked hard, played by the rules, that you actually got ahead. So when I hear people say no one cares, and I heard this a lot when we did our Working Class Heroes tour, it makes me go, well, maybe we should be getting more involved. Maybe we should be demanding more of the things that will make our lives better and ignoring most of the things that rip us apart. I say all the time, we should be fighting for things that make life better and stop fighting over nonsense. Because fighting over nonsense has got us right where we are. And William's right. You've got a Republican Party that has deregulated, that has destroyed, that has detaxed, that has gone and privatized, profitized, and, well, screwed over communities and the little guy. And Democrats, sadly, they haven't been the party of working people until late. And this is where I go back to, I like Joe Biden. I like what Joe is doing. I like the policies that are coming out. The idea that workers should be able to organize. An active NLRB, an active Department of Labor. You know, Julie Hsu, the Secretary of Labor, just held a meeting, you know, a conference with business leaders and labor leaders and workers and brought people together to talk about, you know, how do we make this whole thing work for everyone? You know, we had a Department of Labor for a while that only listened to business interests and was extraordinarily hostile to labor. So for me, William, we have to find the people who do care. And that's what elections are about. It's not about, you know, who won the popularity contest. It's not even about who wears what hat. I want there to be pro-worker Republicans. There just aren't. The sad reality is, and I keep coming back to this, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. Look at the tax policies that they've rammed down our throats for generations now. Starting with Reagan, going through H.W. Bush, coming through Trump. I mean, we have redistributed the wealth of this country so far upward that most working people, and this is what I talked about this the other day with Virginia Fox saying, no one wants to work, at a hearing where they're talking about excessive overtime, where people are working more than 40 hours, but she's sticking to that line because the people who are benefiting from this system want us to be at each other's throats. And I don't know where this election is going to take us. I have great fears. I have great fears that Trump is elected and all of the progress that we've made as a working class will be eviscerated. Which is why you have billionaires supporting him. Because they don't want active, engaged citizens. They don't want empowered workers. They don't want people who are going to demand their worth. They want people who know their place. They want people who are going to be just happy to have a job. I'm okay. They want people who are going to be, we don't want to rock the boat. Instead of saying, you know what? We should all have health care. We should all have retirement security. We should all earn a wage that supports a family and ourselves. And not just bread, but roses too. Not just bare existence, but some of the things that make life better. We've seen this movie before. We've been here before. We just have to learn the lessons of the past and move forward together. That's the answer. So, William, if you believe no one cares, I care. And that's a start. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got lots to get to, lots to talk about. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some not so great news, to be honest. The National Mediation Board, they denied the request of the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. You may remember we had their communications guy, Paul Horshorn, on not too long ago. Talking about wanting to enter into 30-day cooling off period to give the ability of American Airlines flight attendants and workers to potentially strike down the road because they have been negotiating a contract for 5 years. They have not had a raise in 5 years. And yet, because of the Railway Act, Labor Act, under which they are ruled, they don't get to strike. They don't get to just go out. They have to go through a whole long, drawn-out process. 5 years. So we'll see with this. Then maybe we'll get Paul back on the program to share some thoughts. Let's go to the phones. We've got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Sorry, just getting in the car. So I want to make a couple of points. And I think you're absolutely right. Moving forward, what we want is a system that enfranchises as many people as possible. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, what do we do in terms of technological advancement that doesn't only benefit a few people? Many economists believe that the first trillionaire is already alive, and it's just a question of when someone will be able to develop that industry that brings together software and hardware, so that we actually start living in something akin to what we used to watch when we were kids, in terms of the Jetsons.
Yep.
So, so that we don't have to do a lot of the drudgery. The guy who wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning in Chicago in January to come out and pick up all of the garbage outside of my home, there's nothing that's socially redeeming about that. Perhaps he has some degree of satisfaction that he works hard. But it's no loss to society if a machine does that job rather than a human being, and that human being can do something more productive with their lives. If they want to, write poetry or philosophy, if they want to study art, if they want to get involved in their community, all of those things. But what has to happen is, when technology allows us to move forward, we can't have a few people who then benefit from it. So, yes, there's this great thing, and that, all of you can benefit from it, but there's going to be a service fee, just like you pay for everything else, and you have to subscribe to it, and then over the years, we're just going to increase it as you get used to it.
Yep.
In terms of what you're going to end up paying. So making a few people tremendously wealthy, well, the rest of us have to work in some other capacity to pay for the things that we think are now necessary because we've gotten used to them. And that's the big question. Again, what are we going to do in that regard as we move forward relative to technology? Technology is a great thing, but somehow I think people believe that it's their savior, that somehow technology is going to alleviate the need for work. It can in a certain kind of structured society, but in a different kind of structure, as we've already seen. We've had huge gains in terms of technology in the last 40 years. But has that improved fundamentally the quality of life of people? No. In 1969, the middle class was a lot better off than they are today, despite the internet, despite all of the advantages that you have in all sorts of realms. So it's about who benefits and who controls these things. And again, that's a function of public policy. If you don't control the people who are the ownership class, they will exploit people for everything that they can. And I firmly agree with some of the analysis out there that some of this is a sickness, that the idea of I've got 50, 100 billion, 200 billion, I need more. I mean, what in heaven's name do you need more than that for? I mean, why would you need that kind of money?
Well, what's that movie, Moneyball? It's not about the money. It's what the money says.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And unfortunately, you quoted, in terms of, greed is good. Yeah, that's an example of, it comes from Wall Street, in the 1980s film, in which everybody who watched that, virtually everybody, a generation of young men, walked away from that thinking, rather than the lesson that Oliver Stone was trying to teach, which is that greed is not good, and Gordon Gekko is a terrible human being. No, instead, in the following 5 years, record numbers of young men decided they wanted to go and be stockbrokers and work on Wall Street, not because they hated Gordon Gekko, but because they wanted to be Gordon Gekko. I mean, talk about walking away from a movie with the wrong message. Well, that's the message. And they went on to quote that movie for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's America sells you on this idea that, that you're going to be the Gordon Gekko. And as a result of which you have a lot of average people who out there, who will vote for what the billionaire class wants in terms of things like tax cuts. Why? Because they swear to God that within the next 10, 15 years, they're going to be part of that class.
It's going to be them.
They really believe it.
They're going to hit the big one. It's going to happen. You're spot on, Steve. Yeah. I appreciate the thoughts, man. Good stuff, as always. Taking it from Gordon Gekko, I swear every one of those books I read as a kid, like 1984, everyone took the wrong message. It wasn't a playbook of what to do. It was a cautionary tale of what not to do. Let's go to Kurt in Akron online too. Kurt, how are you today? And I'm glad I can hear you.
Oh, hi. Hi, Rick. Thank you for taking my call. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, I've been calling all week, but you were doing some really good topics this week, anywhere from the American dream to home ownership and everything. And it got me thinking about as far as the home ownership thing, it got me thinking about the place where I live here in Akron, which is a neighborhood called Firestone Park. And this is a neighborhood, that was built in the 1920s, 100 years ago, where Harvey Firestone wanted his employees to live close enough to the factory that they could walk or take the trolley, and he built an entire neighborhood for his employees to live in.
Yeah, company town. There are lots of them around the country. What's the point?
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say is, can you imagine an employee or an employer doing that nowadays? You know, building an entire neighborhood to keep their employees happy so that they show up to work, or, you know, think about, you know, something like that. I mean,
but here's the thing, Kurt. I don't think I want to romanticize, the era of the Milton Hershey's, of the, the company towns. I don't think I want to romanticize that. But I get your point that they did, you know, on a certain level, meet the needs of their workforce, and they did try and make things a little bit more tolerable. I'll agree with you on that.
Right, for the families, you know, those are people who, you're right, you shouldn't romanticize it, but, you know, these are people, too, who, you know, like I said, built these neighborhoods, and then the families, the children learned to grow up together, and they became friends, and you actually had people, you know, looking out for each other, caring for each other, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would say that's more the operation of the individuals and the communities and not our wealth class.
you're right. But as far as the American dream goes, thank God for things like the GI Bill that gave my grandfather the chance to start his own heating and cooling company back in 1952, 6 years after he came home from World War II. He was a guy who obviously, as a small businessman in the 50s and 60s, like anyone else, may have struggled a little bit because you were by yourself. But as time went on, he was established and, you know, people started to go to him for their needs as far as what he was offering them. If he couldn't do a job, his competitors, he would, he would refer his competitors to someone who could do the job. He even co-signed loans for his competitors to get them started, to the point where people knew who he was, even well into the 21st century. People knew who he was because he had that reputation as a great small businessman and a reputation for the kindness that he did. But, you know, people would go to him even before he died. And, you know, he's the only employer I know who not only gave people a wage, obviously, health insurance and 401ks, that sort of thing, but he's the only employer I know who waited until the end of the day to leave to go do his own thing because he wanted to shake every employee's hand to thank them for doing a job well done that day.
Yeah, that's a generation long gone. Long gone, my friend. But I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Nice to, but it's a nice way to remember what it used to be.
Yep.
And, you know, you kind of wish it could survive in this kind of business environment.
I'm right there with you.
All right. Well, thank you. And, hey, maybe I'll give you a call tomorrow for the last show.
There you go. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it. No, and look, you know, Kurt's right. I mean, you think about that generation. I think of my uncle who passed just about a year and a half ago, who started a small business back in the early 60s, and it grew to be one of the biggest, electrical contractor businesses in the city. And you know, he was kind of the same way, went to all of the employees' weddings and funerals and birthdays and sent, you know, cards and you know, gifts for, you know, birthdays and graduations. He was, you know, the kind of guy you wanted to work for. And sadly, what's happened is, you know, he passed it on to his kids, and what they do, they sold out to a giant conglomerate. That's how things go. And I go back to it's the Gordon Gekko thing. It's the greed is good, hooray for me, and the heck with everyone else. And I think Kurt's right. You know, how do we get back to a time where you would send work to your competitor if you couldn't do it, to ensure that people got what they needed, that sense of community? I don't know. I'm not sure that that'll ever come back. But I'm hopeful that we we will come back together. Because look, you know, I think back to that the time that that Kurt was talking about, you know, building the rubber barons, building you know, company towns. There was camaraderie, there was solidarity in those towns. There was organizing that went on in those towns that made life not just tolerable, but nice, but, you know, livable. And I'm not going to give credit to the Fords and the, you know, the Milton Hersheys and the Firestones, but to the people. And I think even in this moment, I think we can organize and make life better. Just my thought. So if you know, as I said at the beginning, you know.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Brief. The sound of joy when Karen Schrem got the news by phone that her 21-year-old daughter Mia was released by Hamas, one of eight hostages released. 30 Palestinian prisoners were freed by Israel during an extension of the pause in fighting. Republican Congressman George Santos remains defiant and says he's standing his ground as the House begins debate on an expulsion vote, which is expected to take place tomorrow.
I have been convicted of no crimes, Mr. Speaker. My loyalty to this country that gave me life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is true and unquestionable.
Montana's attempt to ban TikTok runs into a federal court roadblock, CBS's Tom Foti reports.
In his view, the state ban oversteps state power and infringes on the constitutional right of users and businesses that keeps the popular social media platform available as the case goes higher up in the courts.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A leadership race is underway in the Wisconsin State Senate. Democratic Minority Leader Melissa Agard is leaving the legislature to run for Dane County Executive. Senators Jeff Smith and Diane Hesselbein tell Up North News they plan to run for the post. The Journal Sentinel reports Senator Keller Royce is also interested. A vote is expected by the end of the day on Friday. President Biden does better with likely voters in recent polls, while Donald Trump does better with less than likely voters, assuming that's the presidential matchup next year. Pollster Charles Franklin.
When we look at likely voters, Biden does a bit better. When we look at the less than likely voters, Trump does better with them.
Franklin spoke at a forum at Marquette University on Wednesday. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, low in the upper teens. A mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, high mid-30s. Mostly cloudy and upper 30s for the weekend, with a brief rain or snow shower possible Saturday night into Sunday morning. Currently 29 degrees.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Groups that disobey. This is Jim Hightower saying, these attacks are silly because they are silly, and also because they're attacking the future. To work for yard sanity and choice, go to rewild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interestingly enough, you have former Speaker Kevin McCarthy going after Matt Gaetz. And why not? Because Matt Gaetz is a horrible person. But you got McCarthy saying that, he is a decidedly unserious member of Congress who belongs in jail. Pretty stern words, to which Matt Gaetz responded, tough words from a guy who sucker punches people in the back. The only assault I committed was against Kevin's fragile ego. And you go, how wonderful to see the people that we elect to do the people's business interacting so wonderfully. And while the children bicker and fight, there's real work that needs to be done. And sadly, all our news media feeds us a steady diet of outrage, candy, and division. How about we talk about getting something actual done? Getting some work for we the people done as we look down the double barrel of a massive structural shift in this country? How about an economy that functions for everybody? And here to share some thoughts on maybe how we get something done and something that's near and dear to my heart, I've asked the good representative, Mark Takano, to come talk with you. Mark is a congressman for California's 39th congressional district. Congressman, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm really glad to be here, Rick.
So let me get your thoughts on this whole this child's play going on. I got to ask you, this has got to be just ridiculous. I mean, people send you to Congress to do some work, get stuff done, bring home the bacon, whatever, and this is what we've gotten out of Republican leadership.
Yeah, no, they haven't showed that they can govern. There's a group of Republicans who aren't interested in governing. They're really extreme ideologues, and they care more about their extreme fantasies than about doing anything for everyday people. And so being right is more important than getting something done.
I just answered an email from a listener who said, look, things are tough. People are struggling. The economy is hard for working people. And he doesn't believe anybody's listening. He doesn't believe people care. And as I've said, look, no, I care. I care about, making sure that we push policies that are going to make lives better, that we're fighting for things that make lives better instead of over things that divide us. What would you say to somebody who goes, look, I have no hope in the system. Nobody's listening. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody cares, Mark.
Well, look, I can understand why that listener feels the way he does. But let me just say that there are some things I want him to pay attention to. In the last Congress, the 117th Congress, we passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which had some real cost savings for many, many Americans. Americans that depend on insulin. There's a heck of a lot of us that depend on insulin. The Democrats capped it at $35. They've been able to reduce the cost of drugs by having Medicare negotiate directly with drug companies for about 10 drugs a year. Did it go as far as I wanted it to go? I personally, no. I wish the heck that we would have said Medicare can negotiate cost of every drug. Why do we have to limit it to 10? But they're selecting 10 of the most utilized drugs by the American people. Every year, an additional 10 come up. There have been real efforts to try and rein in the cost of healthcare, but especially prescription drugs. That's one thing that eats up people's budgets. I think the other way to look at it, I want to acknowledge the pain that people are suffering with inflation. Inflation comes after tremendous events like a pandemic. Remember, we lost 1 million people. That's about 400,000 people that we lost in World War II. And we suffered great inflation after World War II as people began normal demand, as the economy, the wartime economy shifted to a regular consumer economy. We saw inflation that followed a traumatic event like World War II. We had a traumatic event. 1 million people died. supply chains were interrupted. So there's some adjustments going. Look, there's also some problems with corporations taking advantage by raising the prices because there's not enough competition.
Yep.
They've consolidated too much. So we really need the right people in government to break up these monopolies and these cartels that exist.
No, I agree with you. Look, I've asked the question 1,000 times. Who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Who's going to be the trust buster? Who's going to be this generation's Harry Truman, going to go after the people who are, you know, more profiteering or pandemic gouging? Who are going to be those people? And are Democrats doing that?
Yes. Well, the answer is the Democrats are doing this, not as much as I want them, not want us to be doing it, but they are doing it. You know, the president's appointee to the FTC, you know, is doing as much as she can with executive authority to, you know, look at the ways to actually address the ways in which lack of competition is a problem out there. But more needs to be done. Congress is too closely divided. But I actually kind of see even some voices on the right who are also understanding that this consolidation, lack of competition, monopoly is not the word, but you know, too much consolidation where there's too few players and not enough competition is driving up prices. But look, the other way we can help the American people is to make sure that their wages and their salaries are able to grow. And we can do it in a couple of ways. There's three ways we can do this. One is to raise the minimum wage. And whenever we get a minimum wage on the ballot in some state, it usually wins.
Correct.
Even in Florida, it was winning.
Correct.
The other way to do it is to is to make sure that people have a right to overtime pay. And the way overtime pay works is that if you make less than a certain threshold, you have a right to earn overtime pay. It's called the overtime threshold. Unfortunately, that threshold for many decades was allowed to stay at a certain level.
$23,660.
Okay, thank you. You know that level. You know, it needs to be raised so that more people are eligible for overtime pay. And to crack down on employers who give people manager titles who really aren't managers, because that's the way they can evade overtime pay, is they bop you on the head and say, you're a manager. And managers have to work overtime with no pay.
Right.
We'll make you in charge of a McDonald's and you work 60 hours a week because you're the manager. You're really mopping the floors, flipping burgers, doing everything else that regular line workers are doing. You're doing some managerial work, but that's an unfair. So we need to, one, raise the threshold.
Right.
And but you two, crack down the classifications.
But Mark, you do get the cute little pin though.
You get the cute little pins as manager, but
you get
after a month, that becomes pretty meaningless and people begin to figure it out. And you would rather be qualifying to earn overtime pay than that manager.
Absolutely.
Title.
Look, you know, the reality is, and the third way is to encourage people to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, conditions. And I think the National Labor Relations Board has been doing a fabulous job. I love Jennifer Brazil. I think she's doing amazing work, and we need to be doing more of it. And you guys need to do some work getting the PRO Act passed.
I've been a champion of the PRO Act since its inception. I'm on the education and labor committee. I call it educational labor. Republicans like to come in and they hate labor. They have a visceral hate for labor. They don't even want to have labor in the title of their committee.
Yep.
Listen, first time we've had a president of the United States go on a picket line when so much is at stake. And look, the UAW didn't get everything they wanted. Some of those folks on the picket line thought that they were going to get the four-day work week, which I'm also a champion of. So you can also shorten the work week and say that people earn overtime pay at 32 hours rather than 40. I believe on balance that wouldn't shorten people's hours. It would make more people eligible for overtime pay that many people would elect to take.
Well, but since you brought this up, because, you know, look, I've talked about this extensively. You know, people are like, oh, my gosh, how could you go to a 32-hour work week? And their heads are exploding. I go, can you imagine back in the 1880s when the 8-hour day movement started? 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. That idea of having life balance and work balance. Can't you imagine how the employers' minds exploded when they were used to the sun up, the sun down, 6 days a week work week?
They were used to a 19th century laissez-faire, like, you know, let the market determine all of this. And people regularly worked 60 hours a week or more.
Yep.
It was not like you had a weekend. The weekend was legislated after a lot of social justice movements. And the industry that pioneered it was the auto industry. The auto industry was, so it's really interesting today to see the auto industry put the shorter work week, the 32-hour work week, on the table. I was happy to just see it get on the table. I just came back from, I took my father to Paris for the very first time. He'd never been. I sat with a young Paris city councilman, Paul Att. He's the youngest city councilman in Paris. And he told me, I learned that the sanitation workers in Paris, I think, work 32 hours or 33 hours. It's either 32 or 33.
Right.
And the problem in Paris is that they have a lot of strikes. But look, this is not within reach. Could they be better managed in Paris? Could they be? Could there be someone that like says you gotta do 32 hours of work and get better services? Yeah, but the point is that stronger unions in other countries have meant that workers have more leverage and they get a better deal. And look, you mentioned before we got on the air about AI. I think, and you know, President Obama just a few weeks ago at the Democracy Forum of all of his alumni from his administration, he says, you know, we got to start talking about a shorter work week and things like universal basic income as a response to the disruption that AI is going to cause in many sectors of the economy. We got to start talking about that. And so rather than having our heads explode or get freaked out that people's heads are exploding, the truth is, we're facing some very serious and real disruptions by artificial intelligence. And we've got to think of some real adaptations and responses. And it can't be that hundreds of thousands, millions of people lose work or lose the ability to earn enough money, because who's going to buy all this stuff?
Exactly. No, our economies make. You know, look, Mark, you know, one of the things that I've said for a while is our representatives, folks like you in Congress, we're already behind the eight ball. This is something we should have been talking about a decade ago. We should be doing a whole bunch of things in a whole bunch of directions and quickly, because I want this to be, because look, we're not going to stop it. I'm not a Luddite. We're not going to destroy the machines. It's not going to happen. But I want this to be the first major transformational change in work in the history of civilization that doesn't destroy the working class and that workers don't take it on the chin. I want this to be an opportunity where people go, okay, yeah, my industry is going away. Look, I'm in the trucking industry. I know in a decade, maybe two, all trucks are probably going to be automated. I don't want to stop that, but I also want to make sure that the people who are going to get those jobs down the road have a way to support themselves and their families. And this is where I come to the reason I asked you to come on was, you know, look, you mentioned a 70-hour work week. My truck driver buddies and I, we've done those 70-hour work weeks without overtime pay, without pay most of the time when the wheels aren't moving. So the fact that you and Congressman Van Drew of New Jersey and Senator Ed Markey, who we've had on this program a couple of times, and Senator Padilla of California, have introduced this Guaranteeing Overtime for Truckers Act, to me is, to steal a Bidenism, kind of a big freaking deal.
It is a big freaking deal. The truckers were excluded from the protection of the original Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. So when President Roosevelt set minimum wages and set overtime pay and the work week in the Fair Labor Standards Act, they caved to the trucker lobby, not the truck drivers, but the people who own the trucking companies.
Yep.
And so what, you know, the feeling, drivers have been paid on interstate commerce. They've been paid according to how long they've driven, the distance they've driven, not the hours. And so they're cut out of the ability to own overtime pay. And so, as you said, truck drivers wait around for the trucks to be loaded at whoever, you know, the shipper, whatever shipping operation that they're at. They could be waiting around for hours, and they're not getting paid for that. Look, I think it's fundamentally wrong. And look, the other thing is truckers have they can't drive over a certain amount of hours, so they're also constrained by that. Truckers' time is valuable too. They shouldn't be treated any less than a sanitation worker who gets paid by the hour and who earns overtime after they work 40 hours. So what Representative Van Drew and Senators Markey and Padilla and I want to get done is to just simply end this exclusion of truck drivers from being protected by the overtime provisions of the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act. No, it's been decades that they've had to suffer under this. It's time it ended.
No, absolutely. And I argue that this would make the road safer. You know, when I tell people I'm a truck driver, everyone goes, oh my gosh, you know, everyone, you know, they're always aggressive, always, you know, doing this stuff. I go, that's because the wheels got to keep moving. And the faster those wheels move, the more money they make. You take that incentive away to that piecemeal incentive away. You're going to have safer drivers. You're going to have people who are, I think, going to be more conscious about their craft and not, you know, I got a deadline I got to get to so I get this bonus or all of the stuff that comes out of it. So I think this is a good first step in helping the industry.
Yeah, and I think the other part of it is that we've got to structure somehow the cost of this movement so that the shipper and the receiver also bear the brunt of that cost of how long that driver is waiting around for it to be unloaded or to be loaded. I mean, there are other ways to exact more efficiencies out of what we currently have by making the receivers and the shippers more incentivized. Yeah. To be more efficient.
What do you say to the person, though, Congressman, that says, well, you're just going to hasten the move to AI, you're just going to hasten the automated vehicles, and they're going to want to get rid of drivers? What do you say to that argument?
Well, you know, I wouldn't get too exercised about that for the trucking industry yet. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure that has to be laid out to make driverless infrastructure, driverless commercial trucks viable. I'm seeing cities up and down California not really thrilled about driverless taxis.
You think?
It's not ready for prime time. And I don't know how fast prime time driverless trucks are going to be.
No, I keep saying all the time, I go, you know, look, I can't get Netflix to not buffer, and I've got the best internet you can buy in my neighborhood. You want an 80,000-pound vehicle careening down the road on the inner tubes that can't play, you know, a movie on my TV?
Yeah, well, look, what I do think will happen is that there may be a lot more automation and efficiencies being introduced at the shipping facility to shorten these wait times that the drivers have. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that it makes sense for yep. the transportation folks, the transportation businesses to eke out more efficiencies than try to automate the driving.
No, you're spot on. No, that's probably the biggest point in all this. Make those drivers' time valuable and cost the shippers, and you'll see them getting people moved really quickly. And that driver shortage we're told exists would kind of go away. You listen to the Rick Smith Show, or Congressman Mark Takano. He's a representative from California's 39th Congressional District. Before I let you go, I got to ask you, you're the ranking member on the Veterans Affairs Committee. I know you got some legislation moving to try and help with veteran homelessness, which is very important, and help with getting the care that veterans need. Walk me through what's going on these important fronts. Because, I think everybody wants to make sure that, or at least I hope, everyone wants to take care of our veterans.
We have something called the HOME Act, which I'm grateful for the Republican majority for bringing down on Monday to the floor. But it should have been brought to the floor several months ago. What it would do is basically increase the per diem compensation to the local nonprofits that get veterans off the street and into motels and hotels for temporary housing. We actually brought down the rate of homelessness during the pandemic, believe it or not. Biden was able to do this because we had emergency adjustments to those rates. And those rates went away once the health emergency went away. And I said, look, we were having such great success at getting veterans into housing, temporary housing, get them off the streets. Why don't we just continue this? Because it's not a huge, huge, huge part of the, it's in the millions, not in the billions. Republicans did not want to continue it forever. They said, well, we'll do it for 18 months. Well, we had an 18-month agreement like 6 months ago. And as you know, we had like this latest debacle with a speaker election that lasted for nearly a whole month. We lost floor time. So look, I want to get this bill done by Christmas. That's my thing. I would like to get it done by Christmas. I think the American people are really upset, get really upset about homeless veterans, especially in these winter months. And if they knew that Congress has the bill, has the agreement among the House and Senate leaders, I think they'd be angry to see that there's any political games being played with the HOME Act, is what it's called, the HOME Act. The HOME Act is going to be on the floor on Monday. The question is whether they're going to bring down the agreed upon language or a bill that has intentional flaws in it, so that more political games can be played so they can extract something more. My message to my Republican colleagues is, come on, if we didn't have a speaker debacle for the last for a whole month, maybe we had time to play these games. But you've been bringing down hordes of amendments that don't pass because your own members don't even pass them. You have time to play those games, but you don't have But you want to play even more games with this veteran homelessness bill called the HOME Act. Don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. We don't have the time. Get this done so that we can get the homelessness providers for our veterans the ability to start planning to get the programs in place. And the other thing, Elizabeth Dole. Elizabeth Dole has this amazing bill to help with long-term care for our veterans. She's done amazing. She's built an amazing bipartisan network. Everybody loves Elizabeth Dole and her work with caregivers, and I love her. I would love to see Bob Dole. He died just a few days after Monday next week. I'd love to see on the anniversary of his death, the Elizabeth Dole Act pass Congress in a form that can just pass the Senate.
Right.
We have a thing called the hotline in the Senate. So once bills that are non-controversial that are in perfect form go to the Senate, it goes on something called the hotline. And if no senators object, it will pass. I want the House Republican leadership to allow hotline-ready bills, the HOME Act and the Elizabeth Dole long-term care bill, to come to the floor. We've already come to an agreement on it. But don't play any games. Don't put down any flawed language that the Senate has to fix and then we gotta spend many more weeks on this. Let's get this done by Christmas. Let's
I'm
get
right
a Christmas
there with
present for our veterans.
There you go. Look, you're much more charitable to the other side than I would be. We don't have time for those games. We don't have time because there are people who are struggling. There are veterans who are homeless, and there are people who aren't getting what they need. We've got hungry children thanks to this stuff. I'm not as charitable as you, but we do need to get work done. Representative Takano, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great fight, and I hope you come back and talk to us again.
Oh, I love this. Thank you for I'm surprised I haven't been on your show before. I'm so glad to have had an opportunity.
Well, you're welcome back anytime. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Congressman Mark Takano. I want to hear your thoughts. Am I being a little mean by saying he's a little charitable? Maybe I am. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.